Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. This is A.B. Dauji, and this is The Big Picture. How's it, eh? You know, I'm so glad to visit you once again. So nice. It's actually the highlight of my week to be visiting you, even though you didn't offer me tea and nankatai. Let's get on with the show, and let's look at the stories that made it into the newspapers. The nutty ones, and sometimes the not-so-loony ones. And today I got a serious one for you. It's all about how we are systematically killing our wonderful planet. Just in the past 10 to 15 years, the buzzwords that you hear are global warming, climate change, depletion of the ozone layer, and so on. The ice at the North Pole is melting. Sea levels are rising. Sudden extreme weather conditions are creating havoc, tsunamis and severe droughts, and of course the level of pollution is absolutely frightening. Coral reefs are damaged, and therefore sea life is severely affected. And plastic is the last straw. Plastic is the last straw. Or should I say, straws are one of the key offenders causing widespread destruction. And that's what I want to speak about today. Straws, the thing you put into your cool drink cans. Listen to this. Globally, more than 1 billion single-use plastic straws are used and thrown out daily. Did you get that, eh? Globally, more than 1 billion single-use plastic straws are used and thrown out daily. Straws are not biodegradable. There is no natural process that destroys plastic, even after hundreds of years in the sun. It just breaks into small pieces. It's still plastic, and plastic lasts forever. There are more than 18,000 pieces of plastic in every square kilometer of ocean. Wow. There are more than 18,000 pieces of plastic in every square kilometer of ocean. Straws are not recycled. They are made of polypropylene. And despite the recyclable logo, they are not recycled anywhere. A dump truck, that is a garbage truck, you know these things that come and collect all your garbage bags. A dump truck load of plastic waste enters the ocean every minute. A garbage truck full of plastic waste enters the ocean every minute. Over 1 million birds are killed by plastic every year, many by drinking straws. Drinking straws, like all other plastic, are made from crude oil. Plastic uses 8% of the world's oil resources, so it contributes to global climate change. A little bit of background here. The oldest straw in human history, over 4,600 years ago, was used by Queen Puabi of Ur. And yes, it was reusable straw. Only thousands of years later, in 1888, was the modern disposable drinking straw invented by a man named Marvin Stone. Guess what? This straw was made of paper. Even the bendy straws were made out of paper, and Stone invented a machine to make paper straws very easily. And it wasn't until the mid-1970s that the dominance of paper straws was overtaken by the disposable plastic drinking straws that we commonly see today. Why? Because plastic was cheap. Nobody cared about the consequences. Let me read that main part again. A dump truck load of plastic waste enters the ocean every minute. So while I was speaking for the last minute or so, a whole garbage truck of plastic waste was dumped into the ocean somewhere. And globally, more than a billion single-use plastic straws are used and thrown daily. Remember the old days when we had paper straws? Hey, they work so well. What is the problem? They work very well. And you can dispose of them. And it won't pollute the environment. No, it's paper, thin paper. What was the problem? The problem was plastic is cheaper and therefore easy to produce, cost effective. But the cost to the environment is something else. So there you are, people. When you are having your next can of cool drink, contemplate on that plastic straw in front of you. And then think about global warming and pollution. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's not a subject that's discussed very much amongst Muslims. And I wonder why. Well, we should be concerned. Hadith in Sahih Muslim says, the world is beautiful with lush green vegetation. And verily, Allah, be He exalted, has made you His stewards in it. And He sees how you acquit yourself. What does this mean? This means that all of the resources upon which life depends have been created by Allah as a trust, amana, trust in our care. He has ordained sustenance for all people and for all living beings. Look at the terrible situation in the Cape, the water shortage. Suddenly people have a sharp new awareness about this very precious commodity, water. We take it for granted. Wasted. Shower is running. Let the tap run. But more importantly, we should be looking at the big picture. How man, by his actions, is killing the planet. So I'll leave you with that thought in mind. And now to the next story. And dear listeners, let me say this. I am very, very sad and disappointed that I could not make it to a very big event overseas. No, I'm not speaking about the tamasha at Davos, Switzerland. My friend Donald, he asked me to meet him there, but hey, it's too cold there now. Minus something degrees. No. It was another big event. A beauty contest. That's right. A beauty pageant. I missed it. It was very big and very prestigious. The total prize money was, you won't guess this. $57 million. That's around 700 million rands. Did you get that? 700 million rands for those who won in the various beauty categories. Now that's amazing, eh? The judges were looking for special features in the beauty contestants. And let me read to you from the Telegraph newspaper. It says here that they were looking for long necks, big lips, and defined humps. Did you get that? Long necks, big lips, and defined humps. Wow. Big humps? I suppose that would have attracted me. So where did the amazing beauty contest take place? And again, you won't believe this. It was in Saudi Arabia. Yes, you are shocked, I know. And what was really shocking was that some of the beauty contestants, those who took part, were disqualified for using Botox to improve their looks, you know, injecting their lips to make them look more puffy and attractive. Botox. That's, of course, cheating. And so 12 of the contestants were disqualified. And what do you expect when you could win 20 million Saudi riyals in each beauty category. So, what's all this about? Hey, what's all this about? I hear you say. Well, here is the story. Saudi Arabia is holding a one month long animal beauty contest, an annual beauty contest, an annual beauty contest for camels. That's right, for camels. It's known as the King Abdul Aziz Camel Beauty Pageant, and it is held in the Al Rumahiyya Desert outside Riyadh. And this is from the British Telegraph newspaper. It says here, owners are seen applying hairspray and giving massages to their best breeds before the start of the competition in the backstage pen where the camels are kept. Applying hairspray and giving massages to these camels to make them look nice and sharp and beautiful. And this is from the Guardian newspaper. This year, a dozen camels were banned after a vet was caught performing plastic surgery on them. Camels were also given Botox-type injections at his clinic, according to Saudi media. Ali Al-Mazrui, the son of an Emirati camel breeder, told the United Arab Emirates daily newspaper, The National, they use Botox for the lips, the nose, the upper lips, the lower lips, and even the jaw. It makes the head more inflated. So when the camel comes, it looks like, oh, look at how big that head is. It has big lips, a big nose. After the ban was imposed, the chief judge of the show, Fauzan Al-Mahdi, told Reuters News, the camel is a symbol of Saudi Arabia. We used to preserve it out of necessity. Now we preserve it as a pastime. The month-long festival is the biggest in the Gulf and involves up to 30,000 camels. Sure. What a big function, what a big pageant. 30,000 camels taking part in the beauty competition. So exciting, eh? I really missed out. And all this brings me to the next story, which is still about the happenings in the Middle East. You know what? I really don't understand why people keep going to Dubai. I went just once, and I was quite unimpressed. It's an artificial creation to attract tourists. Artificial. But I suppose that's the aim. Amazing building, lots of entertainment, magic food places, lots of buzz, shopping. It's all there. Excitement. And the tourists, they just roll in, pouring in. And the dollars keep pouring in. Big bucks. Dubai Airport is a veritable hive of activity. Planes pouring in every minute. Lots of South Africans go to Dubai to enjoy this magic atmosphere and maybe to hear if they have been given a cabinet post in our government. And just to pause a little bit. Shame. Shame. Our Yakubai is getting really desperate. Yakubai is getting really desperate now that he is a lame duck president. And people with handcuffs are lurking around his chommies. Yesterday I heard him on the news saying, Haibo, just because I built a house in Nkandla, they want to arrest me. And everyone in the audience clapped and laughed and all of that. And he kept repeating it, hey, man, just because I want to build a house in Nkandla, they want to arrest me. Incredible. As I said, the poor guy is really desperate. They want to arrest him because he built a home in Nkandla. He's really insulting everyone's intelligence. What about the 780 something matters on the charge sheet that has been buried for years? Well, It's all coming out. The ghosts of the past that have been buried are now emerging to haunt him. Anyway, let me leave that and get back to Dubai. Yes. Yes. As I was saying, Dubai is just one big tourist magnet. Some people like it. Well, I suppose everyone to their own tastes. Given a choice, I would go to South India. Nothing artificial there. Everything is beautifully natural. Well, you know, some people go for Umrah, and then after that, when they finished, they spend a few days in Dubai on the way back. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, soon you will be able to have one complete package for both. And you don't have to leave the kingdom, Saudi Arabia. No, sirree. Dubai comes to the Holy Land, courtesy of the Crown Prince, the man, the main O, Mohammed bin Salman, the boss of Saudi Arabia. Only 32 years old and moving very fast to modernize Saudi Arabia. Cinemas are already operating. Women are going to drive soon. They've already attending soccer matches, which was not allowed previously. So, what's next then? What's next? Well, late last year, Salman Bhai announced that somewhere along the coast, not far from Jeddah, he is going to build a huge modern city stretching over some islands and so on, and also the mainland. And they will cater, this place will cater for international tourists. International tourists. He called his bold plan to reform Saudi Arabia Vision 2030. And this was announced at a big meeting, a conference where top investors from all over the world, big boys, big shots were invited. Here's an article entitled, The Dawn of the Saudi Entertainment Revolution. Right, let me read through that very quickly. Let me read that to you very quickly, as fast as I can, before we take a break. It's an article from the Al Jazeera website. It says that in October of last year, Ari Emanuel, the CEO of one of Hollywood's biggest talent agencies, was one of a glittering coterie of international business people and investors drawn to the first future investment initiative, that's what it was called, held in the Saudi capital, Riyadh. Emanuel listened, no doubt very avidly, to the keynote address given by Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in the sumptuous ballroom of the 5-star Ritz-Carlton Hotel, as the prince detailed opportunities for foreign companies and investors. Ari, the brother of Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, a confidant of former President Barack Obama, was interviewed at the conference and spoke glowingly of Mohammed bin Salman's Vision 2030 and the powerhouse role entertainment and culture would play in driving forward an economic revolution in the kingdom. He says, I think you will see live entertainment and music, food festivals, fashion, art shows, you will see that come in. And the good thing is, with Vision 2030, they have a long-term view of what they want it to become. Well, what Emmanuel wants is for his company, William Morris Endeavor, to be a big part of the emerging entertainment industry in the kingdom. After all, Saudi Arabia, under the harsh Wahhabism interpretation of Islam, has been an entertainment desert for decades. No cinemas, no theater, no live popular music events. But now, with Mohammed bin Salman at the helm, pledging to return Saudi Arabia to what he calls moderate Islam, the nascent industry is poised to become a rich oasis. It has huge market potential, as 70% of the Saudi population is under the age of 30. As Vision 2030 puts it, this is what it says in its declaration, we are well aware that the cultural and entertainment opportunities currently available do not reflect the rising aspirations of our citizens and residents, nor are they in harmony with our prosperous economy. And Mohammed bin Salman is well aware too of the huge profits that can accrue if he positions himself at the top of a cultural and entertainment revolution. Vision 2030 claims that the entertainment sector will create 22,000 jobs. More enticingly, the aspiration is to develop tourism that would bring some 50 million visitors to the kingdom annually, in addition to the millions that already come for Hajj, with money to spend on entertainment and holiday resorts. Just how keenly ruthless he is about securing his position becomes clear when one considers the extraordinary events that occurred at the same Ritz-Carlton Hotel 1 week after the Future Investment Initiative conference ended. Anyway, it says here, the opacity, that means the non-accountability of the Saudi system, makes it impossible to define the boundary where Mohammed bin Salman's personal interests, where they end, and state interests begin. But what is abundantly clear is that as head of the Public Investment Fund, the PIF, president of the All-Encompassing Council for Economic Development Affairs, and as defense minister and crown prince, first deputy prime minister, and chair of the Anti-Corruption Committee, all significant economic matters will pass through his hands. In September 2017, the PIF set aside $2.7 billion to invest in the entertainment sector. Now comes word that Emmanuel's company is close to sealing a deal with the PIF that would see the fund inject $500 million in return for a stake in the company. Emmanuel intends to use the windfall to further diversify a company that has already bought sports vehicles such as Ultimate Fighting Championship, otherwise known as Cage Fighting. Anyway, and he sees Saudi Arabia as rich, unexploited territory. That is, we're talking about Harry Emmanuel. He says, people here love to go out with other people, he told the investment conference. They like the communal aspect, so movies and concerts are big players. Sports is a big player. His company Endeavour has all of those bases covered. The linkage with PIF, the fund that Mohammed bin Salman controls, must look like a marriage made in paradise. But perhaps before the deal is done, Emmanuel might want to ponder what happened at the Ritz-Carlton late last year when all those guys were locked up. Finally, he says, as a source recently said to me, that's the writer, with a very wry smile, everybody in the kingdom knows the arrests were selective. Whatever else happened, the detainees' human rights, their rights to a fair trial and transparency were trampled upon. Emmanuel is reputed to be a thoroughly ruthless businessman, but he may well have met his match and more in Mohammed bin Salman. Right, so there you have it. And let me tell you something about, I'll come back after the ad break and tell you who is this guy, Harry Emmanuel. Interesting stuff, very interesting stuff. Let's go for the ad break. Welcome back, the program is called The Big Picture. Right, so I was telling you about this great investment in the new project of Mohammed bin Salman. Incredible stuff, isn't it? Dubai comes to Saudi. Do you want to hear the punchline? Right. The punchline to all of this is, let's ask the question, who is this big shot Harry Emmanuel, the fellow who is going to transform Saudi Arabia, make it a center for entertainment, concerts and all kinds of things? Wait for it. You know, I don't like to make things up, So I will read directly from Wikipedia. It says here, born to a Jewish family in Chicago, Emmanuel was raised in suburban Illinois. Emmanuel is the brother of former White House Chief of Staff under Barack Obama, and he is currently the mayor of Chicago. His brother's name is Emmanuel. Now, his father, where have we got this information now? Let's see. Yeah, his father, Jerusalem-born Dr. Benjamin M. Emmanuel, is a pediatrician who was active in the Irgun, a hardline Zionist militant group whose activities in Mandatory Palestine during the 1930s and 40s led to its listing as a terrorist organization by the British authorities, the Jewish Agency, and the 1946 Zionist Congress. So there you are. Harry Emmanuel's father was a member of Irgun. Did you get that? Mohammed bin Salman's man, who is going to make Saudi exciting, vibrant, dynamic, modern. Harry Emmanuel, his father was part of a terrorist organization that was responsible for chasing and even killing Palestinians in 1948, just before Israel was created. Lovely stuff, isn't it? Huh? And then, dear listeners, you wonder why the Muslim world is in such a big mess. Frightening stuff. Frightening. Right now, let me go to my good friend, my dear friend, Donald Trump, also affectionately known as President Pagla, a man who has been diagnosed as suffering from a chronic case of BDD, Badam Dood Deprivation, which, as you all know, is a medical term which means that if during early childhood one is deprived of the vital nutrient known as Badam Dood, then there is certainty that in adult years one will display serious and dangerous signs of mental deficiency and reckless decision making. My man Donald is a textbook case of this affliction. I heard that this syndrome, BDD, will be published in the British Medical Journal. I hope that they acknowledge the research that I did in identifying this medical condition. Anyway, speaking about reckless decisions, Donald Trump has made some pretty bad ones recently regarding the Palestinians. First, he said that the U.S. recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. But then he qualified it immediately by saying, but the Palestinians and the Israelis can still decide how to share it in future peace talks. That must definitely take the Nobel Prize for talking sheer nonsense. You give it to the Israelis and then say, hang on, it can still be decided how to share it. His second reckless announcement: the U.S. is going to cut its contributions to UNRWA, UNRWA, which is the United Nations organization that gives humanitarian aid to about 5 million Palestinian refugees. He's going to cut U.S. contribution by 50%. I think it's about 65 million or something is going to cut out of his donation to the United Nations fund. His third reckless announcement was that the contribution to Mahmoud Abbas's government, also known as the Palestinian Authority, will be stopped. He just said that about day or two ago. I'm going to stop the contributions to Mahmoud Abbas's government, toy government. The Palestinian Authority, that's the government, relies on foreign donors plus the transfer of the tax collected by Israel from goods entering the West Bank from Israel, which it hands over to the Palestinian Authority. Collects this tax and gives it to the Palestinian Authority. The Palestinian Authority has to pay the civil servants, the teachers, municipal workers, and so on, in the 7 or 8 towns that it controls, and of course also the Gaza Strip. Just in the Gaza Strip alone, there are 45,000 workers, 45,000 workers, who have not been paid by the Palestinian Authority for the past 2 months. Situation is very bad there. Israel is happy that the PA exists because it can say that the Palestinians are ruling themselves. Must understand this, eh? Israel is happy that the Palestinian Authority, this government of Mahmoud Abbas, that it exists, because it can say that Palestinians are ruling themselves, and so it has no responsibility for them. But more importantly, the Palestinian Authority, which was established right after Israel signed a peace deal in 1993 with Arafat, has served the main purpose. Its main purpose was to serve, to ensure Israel's security. It's been arresting and jailing and also torturing many Palestinians who are a direct threat to Israel. Anyone who raises his head and starts criticizing very loudly, they get arrested by Palestinian Authority security officials. So, Mahmoud Abbas, Palestinian Authority's main purpose was to serve as Israel's bodyguard. So the Palestinian Authority has to survive for Israel's sake. But our man Donald, he said this in Switzerland yesterday, we will not hand over money to the Palestinian government because it is not interested in sitting around the table to make peace with Israel. The Palestinian Ministry of Finance received from the United States between January 2012 and May 2016 the amount of $477 million between 2012 and 2016. That was the donation made by the United States. So Donald is closing the tap. This could lead Mahmoud Abbas's government to collapse. They could collapse. And I think that, that won't be a bad thing. I told you this many times before about what I think about that, about Mahmoud Abbas's government, corrupt government. Let's leave Donald and look at the other characters in his government. Nimrata Randhawa. Rings a bell somewhere, doesn't it? Nimrata Randhawa, also known as Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley. Well, you know what? Something has been hitting the fan at the moment on CNN and other U.S. media. And that is that she and Donald are good friends. Well, actually, very, very good friends. Very, 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 very good friends. Also known as Dal Mein Kuch Kala Hai. Something is going on between them, says the recent book Fire and Fury, that gave details about the shenanigans inside the White House. Dal mein kuch kala hai. Yesterday, Auntie Nimrata was very cross, very cross. Fire and fury. She said that this talk that she and Pagla are having an affair is all lies. But you know one thing? She seems to be ready to do anything at all to further her career. Very, very, very ambitious. There is talk that she wants to stand for president at the next elections. And she knows who to bow down to. The powerful pro-Israeli groups in the United States. Ever since she became U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, she has been attacking the Palestinians. Oh, and how too? Attacking them. Worse than even Netanyahu has been doing. And yesterday, she popped up again at the United Nations. And, it makes me want to vomit every time I see her on TV. She condemned Mahmoud Abbas for being angry about Donald Trump handing over Jerusalem to Israel. And she said that he was making, in her words, hate-filled speeches. She promised Netanyahu when she was in Israel that she won't allow Israel to be bullied at the United Nations any longer. Trump also said that he is cross with the Palestinians for disrespecting the Vice President Mike Pence. Disrespecting Mike Pence. Pence recently went over to Israel and Mahmoud Abbas refused to meet him because of what his government was doing in respect of Jerusalem, you know, handing it over to Israel. Well, to be honest, dear listeners, no self-respecting Palestinians should ever meet with Mike Pence because he is a 100% supporter of Israel and strongly believes in biblical teachings about why Israel should be supported. That's his interpretation and the interpretation of 22 million other Americans known as the Christian Zionists. Mike Pence is a Christian Zionist. So who are Christian Zionists and what is their ideology? Well, let me see if I can find that. Aha! I have to go for a quick break so that I can get you that particular article. Okay, welcome back. I don't know, this computer of mine crashed and I just lost that whole article. Fantastic article about the Christian Zionists. And Mike Pence, as I told you, went and made his speech in Israel. And guess who helped him with his speech? I've just picked up something here in the Jerusalem Post. It says, former British Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sacks met with the U.S. Vice President Mike Pence to help him frame religious and historical elements of his speech before Israel's Knesset. Sacks and Pence met in New York for 90 minutes prior to Pence's departure for a two-day visit to Israel, part of the trip that also included Egypt and Jordan. Pence sought Sacks' guidance on the section of the speech which dealt with the historical connection between the Jews and Israel. He was not paid for the consultation. And you know what? It seems that Sacks did a good job in putting in the religious reasons why America should support Israel. Because when Pence gave the speech, this is what he said. He said, we stand with Israel because we believe in right over wrong, in good over evil, and in liberty over tyranny. The people of the United States have always held a special affection and admiration for the people of the book. In the story of the Jews, we've always seen the story of America. It is the story of Exodus, a journey from persecution to freedom, a story that shows the power of faith and the promise of hope. A devout evangelical Christian, Pence paraphrased the biblical Psalms. He said, the USA is proud to stand with Israel and her people as allies and cherished friends, and so we will pray for the peace of Jerusalem, that those who love you be secure and there be peace within your walls and security in your citadels. And we will work and strive for the brighter future, so everyone who calls this ancient land home shall sit under their vine and fig tree, and then none shall make them afraid. Lovely stuff. So there, your listeners, forget the nonsense known as the peace process. Forget justice and freedom for the Palestinians. In fact, forget all about the Palestinians. They don't feature at all as far as America is concerned. This is about religion. The Bible has spoken that Israel must be supported 100%. That's it. Short and sweet. U.S. policy regarding the Palestinians. The Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And if you don't like it, well, tough. Hard is, eh? No one is standing with the Palestinians. They are slowly dying. Slowly dying. Well, after all the doom and gloom, let's look at for some light at the end of the tunnel. I went to visit my good friend Gulambai in Mirbank. As I went to his front gate, two big vicious dogs came up. I called Gulambai. I said, "Hey, when you got these dogs, eh?" And he said, "Last week." "Yeah, you know, here in Mirbank, the crime is very high." I said, "What are the names?" And he said to me that the name, one of them is called Rolex, and the other one is known as Timex. I said, "Hey, what kind of names you got for the dogs, eh?" And he said, "Hey, what's wrong with that, eh? They are watchdogs." This is David Audi bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Stay tuned for more of this a little later.